Man, John Anik, the voice of the UFC. How you doing, brother?
I'm good, Dave. Good to be with you, man. How are you?
Doing great, man. Doing great. I know I checked on your Instagram. A lot of birthdays happened in the last week or so with the family. So how are you doing? How's the family going with all this quarantine mess?
We're doing okay, man. Thanks for asking. It certainly could be a whole lot worse. And I think the birthdays have been a nice distraction, sort of throw your energy into that for a couple days. And, you know, trying to plan an at-home birthday party for a seven-year-old isn't that easy when you're talking about 14 or 15 right. hours of birthday time during the day. So we got through that one, and my wife's 40th. So good to be through it, and excited to obviously have several fights on the books. You know, a lot of us knew this avalanche was coming. I don't know if we knew it was going to be three shows in 7 or 8 days, but buckle up, you know, we're ready to go.
Absolutely, man. We'll definitely get all into that, all the fights, especially UFC 249. We're so excited for it. But a little bit more on you, I thought of one is your podcast. Love it. Oh, my goodness. Love podcasts. Been listening to podcasts for a decade before. It was cool to have a podcast. I think you guys are 246 episodes in, you and Kenny Florian. So how'd you guys get into it? What was the the origin idea of it, and especially what's going on now, your pound for pound, and it's so cool. We're doing like the best UFC fights ever right now. We should have probably went with you guys. We went all 64. We're young in the game. We're eager. We went for it. We should have went to 16. You were right on that.
Well, I don't know if we were right. I mean, I appreciate it. It's an interesting exercise pound for pound because you are leaving guys out, right? So I would have loved to have been able to create a bracket and include 64 fighters because there are probably 128, you know, who would make an argument that they deserve to be in that conversation. But the podcast has been going well. I mean, we were probably late to the game, even though we've now crossed our 5-year anniversary. I'm a radio guy at my core, so it was always a space that I wanted to be in. It was about finding the right podcast partner and making sure that podcast partner could be consistent and could make the commitment required to build an audience to do it every single Monday indefinitely, maybe when there's not any money coming in. So it took me about a year to convince Kenny Florian to devote, you know, a portion of his Monday to do it. So thankfully we're 5 years in and in a space where there are obviously a lot of moving parts and a lot of moving people and a lot of options. But I feel like we've carved a little bit of a niche and, you know, we with some time to kill before these next UFC live events, just doing a right now pound for pound tournament, trying to determine the most skilled UFC fighter in the world right now in April of 2020. And we're about the fans, man. You know, the podcast is really the best way for me to give back to the fans. And I felt like that tournament was a good way to try to engage them and bring them in a little bit.
Absolutely, man. I love it. I think we're around 220 episodes in that range right now. We love
good
it.
For you.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. We have a lot of interviews, a lot of fighters coming up. Monday, Chase Hooper, with the Last Dance and Michael Jordan going on. You see what Michael Jordan is to the UFC or Michael Jordan is to wrestling, right? Chase Hooper is the Michael Jordan of MMA social media. He's amazing. The best in the game. So he's coming in on Monday. Tuesday, nice. We got middleweight. Brandon Alden Allen, loved him. Huge future ahead of him. He's on Tuesday. So we're rolling on content. But I'm with you. I love bringing up new ideas, something out of left field. So many people can come and say, these were the fights this past Saturday. Who won? Who lost? Oh, that's a bad judging score. We'd like to do different ideas, hypothetical stuff, and just really take it down left. We want to make a left turn a lot. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, I think for us, a big core of our show is handicapping and mixed martial arts, gambling and betting. We recap every event and then we preview the following week's event. But most of what we're discussing when we're previewing fights is from a gambling perspective. And it's technical, obviously, of course, with Ken Flo sitting there. But it's fun for me and I can't wait to have fights to have these guys giving predictions on again, man. It's been a drought for sure.
It has. Okay, so let's get into it. UFC 249. I hope it's not hyperbolic, but let's see. One, I think it's the deepest card in the history's organization. We'll talk about the main event. Of course, sometimes with a McGregor or a Rousey or back in the day, a Lesnar or St. Pierre, it was tough to beat it. Main event's amazing, too. The most violent fight in the world. Dana was saying that yesterday. But as deep as it goes, 1 through 12, it's the deepest card I've ever seen. You agree or not agree with that?
I certainly think there's an argument to be made, right? There's not a single fight that you would qualify as low profile, right? When you think about a fight like Nico Price and Vicente Luque, that rematch being on the internet, so to speak, right? Being on UFC Fight Pass streaming, that obviously speaks to the depth that you're talking about. I think we all knew it was going to be a mega card. We just didn't know exactly how the pieces were going to fall. And especially with three shows spaced out over 8 days as we're doing, and potentially a fourth show 7 days thereafter, so 4 in 15 days, you didn't know how the chips were going to fall. So certainly we're thankful that UFC 249 is an absolute monster. And, you know, there could be an interim heavyweight title on the line between Francis Ngannou and Jairzinho Rozenstruik. So that fight, to me, feels absolutely enormous and feels almost as big as those title fights in terms of the divisional ramifications. So, yeah, man, we're loaded on pay-per-view, and I think it's going to be obviously an amazing diversion to sports fans around the world.
Right. I'm happy you said that last thing at the end. We'll get into Francis in a second, who, you know, he went through a little two-fight losing streak. Other than that, one of the, you know, great heavyweights in the last 3-4 years, impressive, you know, inside that octagon, the power. So we'll get into that. I think also, too, not even the deepest card, it might be one of the most important cards in the UFC's history. With everything going on, the coronavirus, the pandemic, sports, there's no basketball, there's no football, there's no baseball going on. We don't know if there's going to be baseball season at all. Yeah. And the UFC to kind of put their flag in the dirt and say, hey, guys, we're doing it. We're bringing fights along. We're bringing it to the public. There might be some, you know, we're mainstream guys and we will watch any card. It was they could have put anything on UFC 249. They could have put like a trilogy fight with older guys and we would have been all in. But to give us this card for one, for two, I'm hoping that the outer rank fans come to MMA and to come to the UFC. And after this card, hopefully they'll be there forever.
Yeah, and after this week, right, if you think about how much we're going to be promoting the fact on May 9th that we got shows coming up on the 13th and 16th as well. So, yeah, I mean, we see it as a huge opportunity. I don't feel any extra pressure, that's for sure. You know, people oftentimes will ask me when you're about to call a McGregor fight, does it feel different? This one will feel different because of the circumstances. You know, Joe Rogan might be at a different table. But for the most part, for us, it's business as usual. Just calling a fight without a crowd. Maybe we'll be a little bit quieter when the fighters are coming towards our side of the octagon so as not to offend in any way with the live commentary or for them to hear it in any way. But yeah, for us, I mean, I hate to say it's just another show, but we put so much effort and energy into every singular show, whether it's ESPN Plus start to finish or the biggest pay-per-view of the year, that for us, the flow and the preparation is largely unchanged.
Wow. That's funny you said that too. I think it was the last pay-per-view or one of the shows on ESPN Plus, the picture with you, EC, and Rogan all falling apart with the big smiles on that went viral. I thought of myself, I'm like, are they going to do that? They're supposed to be 6 feet and around. Are you guys going to be at different tables? So you bringing that up with you and Joe probably at different tables. Do you think would that be a little bit harder to, you know, butt in and make a statement and to commentate with maybe 2 or 3 person booth with not being together, not being close to each other, arm by arm?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, certainly my biggest priority as a play-by-play guy in a 3-man booth is to make sure there aren't a lot of traffic jams. Because for me as a viewer, right, there's just nothing worse than guys talking over each other all the time. So if that means I got to lay back a little bit to give them enough real estate in which to shine, I'm more than happy to do that. I don't worry about our chemistry not being at the same table. There's certainly some physical contact that goes into it. You know, Rogan's always holding us back as soon as something happens, as if he's trying to save us from what's on the other side of the fence. So I'm a little bit of that physical contact, you know, and I'm a touchy-feely guy, so I'll miss all that stuff. The bigger thing for me is my stage manager. Where is he going to be, right? Because all of my scripts and things that I'm required to read that I produce during fight week, he hands to me when the producer calls for them. So there are going to be some navigations going on. You know, post-fight interviews, we don't know what's going to happen with those yet. But I'm pretty confident the UFC not only has its ducks in a row, but has had an awful lot of time to think about all of these singular issues. So, you know, I think I've said this before in interviews, but I called a high profile boxing match for ESPN that took place in Germany from a control room in Bristol, Connecticut, you know, with a green screen behind us and no fans, no nothing. So you just throw yourself into the craft. As you know, the cans cancel a lot of stuff out anyway, and just tunnel vision and call what's in front of you.
Right. And another, you had a great comment too about you know, might not trying to be as loud as you might want to be, or towards, you know, when there's 18,000 people and Mazidov is kicking Ben Askren, you can yell and do whatever because everyone's doing that. But maybe in that moment, if someone's around the cage and Cerrone is going to work on Pettis right in front of you, you might have to be a little bit more gentle, but just a little bit more quiet. That's another little detail that I didn't think about. So you guys got your hands full. It's going to be fun. It's UFC 249, Jacksonville, Florida.
Yeah, Jacksonville, Florida. We'll take it. I live in South Florida, so it'll be about a 4.5-5 hour drive for me. I was prepared to fly to Lemoore, California, through Denver, and there was going to be a long itinerary ahead of me on both sides and maybe a 14-day quarantine away from the family on the back end. But I think for all of us in the live event business, and hopefully you have a spouse and a family that dovetails with this opinion, but eventually we have to go back to work, whether it's May 9th, May 23rd, June 1st. So I'm pretty confident in my employer to get the job done and to put us in a position to succeed and be safe. And if May 9th is when my number gets called and it looks like it's that way, then that's where I'll be.
Absolutely, my man. Okay, let's really dive into the card. You mentioned this, go right there with Francis and Rosenstruck. Do you think it could be for the interim championship? Would that add a little bit more juice? Or doesn't matter? Everyone knows to me this is clearly a number one contender. Or hoping for Stipe in DC, maybe in the late summer, maybe DC's swan song, and then we'll kind of get the heavyweights back in business. But what do you think on this fight? What does it mean for the division?
You know, life isn't fair, but I understand that it probably wouldn't have been fair to Stipe, who did win the belt in August and is a decorated former champion of the highest caliber, for him to have an interim belt on the line less than 12 months after he won the belt. I understand that that isn't perfect, but I don't think he's going to defend the belt within a calendar year. You know, he's publicly serving right now, all power to him. So I wouldn't have minded if they had raised the stakes here, because it feels certainly like an eliminator and a number one contender's bout. All the credit in the world to Jarzynho Rozenstruik. And you know he wants to be champion, because there's only one reason why you call out Francis Ngannou. If you are a human being and not a fucking bear, there's one reason you call out Francis Ngannou. And that's because you want to be the UFC heavyweight champion. And that's why Jarzynho did that. And obviously, this was supposed to be a 5-round main event. Now it's scaled back to 3. Right. You mentioned the back-to-back losses for Francis Ngannou. One of them was the outlier against Derek Lewis. That fight just makes no sense. And then, of course, the 5 rounds with Stipe Miocic. And there wasn't much good in there except for the fact that Francis was able to survive and was not in any danger, really, of being finished, except due to exhaustion at any point over 25 minutes underneath a very credentialed heavyweight. So I think Francis Ngannou 2.0 right now might be the best heavyweight in the world. I certainly think he'd be favored against every other heavyweight in the world out there from a betting perspective. And I'm excited to see what he can do. I'm excited to see Rozenstruik, because you know he's going to go for it, or we hope he'll go for it. And in theory, if these guys are in 25-minute shape, you shouldn't get anything resembling Ngannou versus Lewis. So it's obviously a huge fight, and I'm glad it's on this card and not headlining May 16th, because I think it deserves this spotlight.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. One thing you said, too, I really love was Francis, when he took the L to Stipe, went 25 minutes with Stipe. I think that's just time you just can't make up, the time you can't get. That's such a learning curve to go 25 minutes with maybe the greatest heavyweight of all time. Even asked me who they thought on the prelims about Carla and Michelle Waterson. And I go, it's a great fight, can go either way. But I love that Waterson went 25 minutes with Joanna, who we just saw. Joanna versus Wade, the greatest female fight of all time. So to me, if you get 25 minutes with one of the greats in your division of all time, that's beautiful. You put that in the tool shed and you have that now. You have that. You can take that in. So I love Francis in this fight. If we had to handicap it, I'm putting down a couple pennies on Francis. That's my 2 cents.
Yeah, well, he's certainly entrenched as the betting favorite and deserves that distinction. But, you know, there are a lot of people out there that, and this is a gross generalization, but they stay away from heavyweight MMA and they stay away from women's MMA a lot too. Maybe there's a lot of decisions and they don't trust judges, but I do know a lot of very sharp MMA minds that very rarely will go near heavyweight MMA just because of how quickly things can change. But certainly the MMA world would be surprised if Ngannou lost. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely. One fight I definitely want to get into, co-main event. Love this fight. Huge fan. One of the best co-main events that you can make in mixed martial arts. Cejudo, Cruz, the all-time greats with Cruz versus Cejudo. Both only have 2 losses. What's your 2 cents on this great fight?
Well, Henry's just so great, and his current form is simply outstanding. I know he had a pretty invasive shoulder surgery, and there has been an extended layoff, but when he really poured himself into the strength and conditioning and mastered that flyweight cut finally, you really started to see the emergence of an elite mixed martial artist. And I feel like we've only seen about 40%, maybe 50% of what he can do on the feet. So Dominic Cruz has his work cut out for him. There's no doubt about it. I do think Dominic, in terms of his preparation, this fight couldn't be happening at a better time. I think strategically for Dom, he was only going to take a fight that was a true number one contender's bout against Piotr Jan or Aljamain Sterling, or he was going to take the immediate title fight if somehow there was a global pandemic that prevented another athlete from getting to the U.S., and sure as shit, that's what happened. But I'm very excited for Dominic because I know that he's in great shape, and even though maybe the sparring partners have been limited, he has had bodies, he has had time, and if anybody can win a championship fight on the back end of a 3+ year layoff, it's absolutely Dominic Cruz. But the improbability and just how incredible it is that he is fighting for a title, having not competed since 2016, you know, I get emotional just talking to you about it. It's going to be a challenging fight for me to call, that's for sure.
Absolutely. We'll get into a couple more fights real quick. Prelim, we haven't even mentioned the main event, the most violent fight in UFC history, maybe. How is it calling fights with, you said emotional, people you care about? You know, I've been in the game just a little bit of time, and it really is. You really get attached in relationships. My twin daughters were born on New Year's Eve, and I sent a video to Kayla Harrison. She was fighting that night for PFL winning $1 million, and we had her a couple times, and she knew about the twins and, you know, sent a little picture. So, yeah, you get attached to, you know, your co-fighters and everything. So, you know, how is it to go in there and to commentate Cruz versus Cejudo, and it's like, tear-jerking almost, right?
Yeah, I mean, it only is an issue up until they start fighting. Once they start fighting, the last thing I'm thinking about is – spending hours, you know, in a hotel room with Dominic Cruz talking about fighting and getting close with that guy, right? So I'm not thinking about that once they start fighting. And the other thing, too, is when you have a matchup like this, Dom might be my best friend on the roster, but Henry Cejudo's a dear friend as well. You know, I've done some TV with him. I have a personal relationship with him. So this ain't easy on all fronts. Once the fight starts, thankfully, it's really all about the action and trying to shine the best possible light on those guys. But when Dominic Cruz makes this walk, circumstantially, he's one of the few guys on this roster whose fight I have never called before. And I really want to maximize those 30 seconds for him. And his story is almost impossible to tell in 15, 20 seconds. So I'm anxious about that walk. I don't script my walks. You know, maybe for Dom, I might actually have to script something just to make sure I get out there with the message that I want. But fascinating stylistic matchup. You know, you can argue for Dom, it's a more favorable matchup than some of the others potentially in the top 10 or top five with guys who have a little bit more length. Dom's got the size advantage for sure. So I'm jumping out of my skin for that fight, as most of the UFC fans are as well.
Absolutely. Talking about, you know, that's a movie. Dominic Cruz's career is going to be a movie one day. We'll have a really good-looking actor to play Dom. It's going to be good, definitely.
Yeah.
Talking about a movie or maybe a reality show, it's one of those shows that's, it's a train wreck and you just have to watch. Is this Ferguson-Khabib? We tried and tried and tried. It's not going to happen. We do get Ferguson Gaethje, which is a suitable replacement, but everyone is really, really happy with this as well. Dana White yesterday said it, the most violent fight that he can make on the UFC card. Main event, UFC 249, interim lightweight championship, Ferg versus Gaethje, the highlight. You know, this is just magnificent.
It's incredible. And both of these guys have been on each other's respective radars for some time. Certainly when you're coming into the UFC, as Gaethje did and when he did, Tony Ferguson, Khabib Nurmagomedov, and others are the guys you've been chasing. So this fight has been in front of Gaethje for a long time. I think it only stands to benefit him that he had an extra 3 weeks to prepare and didn't have to fight on April 18th. He doesn't cut a lot of weight for the division, so he could certainly go a hard 25 minutes, if nothing else. And if social media is any indication, Gaethje's training camp really hasn't been all that compromised. He brought in Beneil Dariush, who's a great body, and Drew Dober, one of his right-hand men, Sean Madden, several other guys who he has had out there, and he's got Trevor Whitman firmly in his corner. All of that being said, Tony Ferguson might be the greatest of all time. And when I say greatest of all time, I don't even mean lightweight. He hasn't lost since Cinco de Mayo 2012, going back to the Ultimate Fighter, eventually finishes everybody. Training habits and regimen, obviously the stuff of legends, has every martial art skill set you could possibly want. Underrated as an athlete, just as a pure athlete, great football player, even better at baseball. He's the total package. Health is really the indicator for me with Tony. You know, I don't want to read too much into the weight cut a few weeks ago. You know, that speaks to me, if you want to be optimistic about it, that he must be in tremendous shape, right? And be at the height of discipline to want to actually go through with that, knowing that this title fight was going to come around again in a few weeks. So, again, I could go on all day about that fight. Technically, it's absolutely fascinating. It is certainly violent. I will give Dana White that. And I think it's bulletproof, really, as far as matchmaking goes, in terms of a fight entertaining people at a time when the main event really needs to be good. There's no scenario whereby this fight isn't not only good, but crazy for as long as it lasts.
Right. I think you nailed it, too. That's something I've been telling all the people about. This is the main event. If any sport has been away for a while, if basketball comes back, they would hope to get the Lakers in the finals. That's right. What people would want to see in LeBron. This is a fight for MMA fans and for us UFC fans. This is brilliant. To bring people mainstream and to get them, hey, watch this in Jacksonville, Florida. I guarantee you this is going to be magnificent, violent, fast, brutal. I hope it goes longer than 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I really do as a fan. I hope both men, nothing but success and to stay healthy through this process. But this is just unbelievable. What do you say to all the people that have a negative towards Tony about should he not fight this? Why maybe waste an opportunity because of Gaethje, of course, defeats him. It's going to be Gaethje Habib in the future, and you probably have the Habib if you just stay away. I'm not one of those guys. Fighters fight, especially guys like Tony Ferguson, and sooner or later, these guys were going to match up. They were going to, they were just the, a train, but they were going to connect sooner or later. So what do you say to the people that think that Ferguson should have stayed away from this fight maybe for now?
Well, first I would say to anyone who would want Tony to not do that weight cut thing, you really have to consider the source. Because even a guy like me, a non-fighter, if I were to take issue with him doing that weight cut, you got to consider the source. Now, Paul Felder, somebody comes out and says, man, I don't see any scenario where that helps him, then I can understand that opinion. As far as the risk of the Khabib fight coming around again, Tony Ferguson was a workhorse for this promotion for a long time. And injuries intervened. And since 2015, December, when he beat Edson Barboza and Joe Silva first mentioned the possibility of matching up Ferguson and Nurmagomedov, he hasn't fought all that often. So I think for him, he's healthy, he's primed, he's primal, he's on weight. There's a belt on the line. He's got the old belt at home. He can get a new one. Let's go, And if he's good enough to beat Justin Gaethje, then Khabib will come around in September or October. I think for Tony at this point, you can't worry about it. And not that Tony thinks the fight is cursed, but when a fight does go away for a record fifth time, this has never happened before in UFC history where a fight is made five times and it goes away. And the fifth time it goes off the books, it's because of a global pandemic. I think if you're Tony, it's like, hey, man, all right, I'll just fight Gaethje and hope it stays together. But I'm pretty confident that unless Gaethje gets it done, that they will do everything in their power to make that fight, fans or no fans, between Khabib and Tony in October.
Right. We have a couple more minutes with you, John Anik. Thank you so much. We appreciate your time. Saturday, so much going on with your family. We really do appreciate it. One of our fans run in and said, what's next if Tony loses? First of all, if I can answer, Tony doesn't think that way. Tony doesn't think if he loses. You can't think that way when you're maybe one of the greatest fighters of all time, like John Anik just said. So one, you just can't think that way. And two, I love something I didn't think about either is, maybe the Khabib fight, like we said, never happens. If he wins this fight, he's the champ. And maybe he stays that way. And of course, the elephant in the room is a Conor McGregor fight, which Tony would love, the fans would love, his bank account would love. So maybe this is a smart thing to do. Just go after Gaethje and get this belt.
Right. I don't see much downside for Tony Ferguson losing this fight. I think if he does lose, then all of a sudden it's a broader web he would cast in terms of what that next fight would be. But if Justin Gaethje is the interim lightweight champion, that because the short answer is he could still fight Khabib. Dave, honestly. Right? Like, the short answer is he can lose to and still fight Khabib because the appetite for that fight is so strong. And we have seen guys coming off a loss get a title fight before. So to me, I don't know that he loses that much. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up fighting a Conor McGregor type, to your point, or somebody else in a high-profile main event, maybe a Dustin Poirier type. But I think Tony is always going to be one win away or in that championship conversation. And if these guys put an epic clash on paper, I really don't think it hurts Tony any. So if there wasn't a belt on the line, it would be far easier to reward Tony with a loss. But to your point off the top, Tony ain't thinking about any of this noise, that's for sure.
Yep, definitely. And they could always run it back. Well, who wouldn't want to see Gaethje hurt too? You never know. Two last things for you. 5 minutes left. We love your time. One, name a fight we haven't talked about yet. You know, Cerrone and Pettis. Greg Hardy's back, healthy, not with his hand hurt. Another heavyweight, Verdum, is back in the octagon. We got the ladies, like we said, Jacare in the middleweight division. It's absolutely stacked. Is there something in there that just jumped at you?
Probably Calvin Kattar and Jeremy Stephens. I've been prepping for that fight, expectant that it was going to go down on April 18th. So, you know, the Boston guy, Calvin Kattar, that jumps off the card for me. Jeremy Stephens and I go way back, obviously, and he's Dom's right-hand man, so I got a personal connection with him as well. And again, you talk about bulletproof matchmaking. I can't foresee a scenario whereby that fight isn't outstanding. So that one jumps off the card. You know, you mentioned the karate hottie Michelle Waterson taking on Carla Esparza. This strawweight division is so exciting. You have, I think, four former champions in the top five, and then you also have Tatiana Suarez. So really excited to see what plays out in this one. Carla Esparza is a totally different beast than she was 4 or 5 years ago, and I think she's actually a slight betting favorite right now. Waterson, a valuable 25 minutes against Ioana, so that fight is great as well. Ryan Spann is a guy no one's talking about that's going to fight early on in the night. He's a great prospect in that division, so it is an embarrassment of riches, UFC 249. Let's just hope it stays together.
Absolutely. You mentioned Boston. We've got Carlos Rosa, Boston Strong versus Thug Nasty. I love that fight in the featherweight division. Yeah. Also about Boston, my wife made the artwork, right? She did the artwork for Don Anik coming on, and she's checking out your Instagram, and she's like, sees you. She's like, what? He's wearing Patriot stuff, and he's a Tom Brady fan. She's a diehard Patriot fan. She's like, I like this guy. I like Don Anik. So, you know, you're good with my wife, and that means you're good with us. Last thing for you, like I said, last question. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, a guy would have walked up to you on the beach and said, John, you're going to be a UFC commentator. You're going to be the voice of the UFC in 2020 through this, you know, life global pandemic of the coronavirus. And you're going to be the first guy on where May 9th, Jacksonville, Florida. What would you say to that person?
Well, in 2005, I would have said respectfully, there's just no way, because I was a boxing radio host who was probably banging on mixed martial arts because I felt so defensive of the sport of boxing at that time in my career. But by 2009, the seat that thankfully I occupy now became sort of the dream. So it's been a lot of sort of hard work and repetitions and getting a few breaks here and there. But yeah, with this global pandemic backdrop and everything else that has sort of affected the sports world, it's just a crazy time to be in it. I think for us, because the April 18th show was a go for a while there, and there was so much preparation that went into it, that we haven't felt our workflow get as interrupted as maybe some other play-by-play guys out there who are just shut down for months at a time. You know, there haven't been a couple of days where I'm not voicing something or talking to guys like you. So thankfully, I haven't been bored. That hasn't been one of the emotions that I've experienced during this COVID-19 outbreak. But thankful to have the seat I'm in next to Joe. Obviously, I don't take it for granted. I feel like I got to earn that seat every show. And I do believe Dana White, you know, really considers me like one of the fighters, that any show could be my last. Wow. You know? So I don't take that pressure to the seat, but I take the seriousness of that to that seat with me every show.
Wow. Unbelievable. We can't wait. It's going to be absolutely bananas here. 2 weeks away, exactly 2 weeks away from today, UFC 249, Ferguson Gaethje, the whole card, the deepest card in UFC's history, and maybe the most important card of the organization's history. Unbelievable. John Anik, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate you. We'll have you again on soon, anytime. And we'll call it again.
My pleasure, man. Good to be with you. Enjoy the twin girls, and all the best to your wife and all those Patriots fans on the final day of the NFL draft here.
I know, man. Awesome. Have a good one, bro. Thank you so much.
Okay, man. Thank you.